Welcome back to another episode of Don't Drop the Ball. I'm Pablo Rosero. Today, joined once again by Madden GOAT, Steven Javorowski, and a good buddy of mine, Kurt Carlson, my personal draft guru. So today, that's what we're going to focus on. But before we go into the nitty-gritty of the draft, a couple transactions around the NFL. First, Miami Dolphins trade Devontae Parker and 2022 fifth-round pick to the New England Patriots for a 2023 third-round pick. Not a bad deal. Interesting trading between division rivals. But the Dolphins now have four picks in the draft, the least by any team. What are you guys' thoughts on that deal?
I mean, from the New England Patriots perspective, they need to get some sort of talent like that's ready right now for Mac Jones to add to that receiver room. I mean, who do they have right now? Kendrick Bourne.
Jacoby Myers.
Nelson Aguilar. Jacoby Myers. Not exactly like A-list level guys. And, you know, Devontae Parker, I mean, he's a big body. He's physical. He can make some things happen.
When he's healthy.
That deal for them. When he's healthy, that was what I'm about to go into next. But I mean, you know, the Dolphins getting some, they got the third round pick, right?
Yeah, in 23. They have five.
Yeah, they got
the third round. More picks in the first three rounds of next year's draft than they do in the entirety of this year's draft.
Got you. I guess they're really, like we said in the previous episodes, they're really trying to figure out if Tua is the guy this year. Then if he's not, just whatever ammo they got for next year. But I mean, the Patriots made the right move getting somebody to help that receiving core. But, you know, they might go after somebody in the draft. Who knows?
Hey, we've talked about the Dolphins so much in these past couple episodes, we might have to turn this into a Dolphins podcast at this point.
Right. What'd you think about it, Kurt?
I think Bill finally got his ex as long as Devontae can stay healthy for 16 games or 17 games now, a season. You know, he's clearly been trying to get an X for quite some time. They paid Nelson Aguilar to be that last year. He wasn't the most efficient in that role. Years and years of Josh Gordon, you know, that never really worked out for them. Antonio Brown didn't work out. And they really haven't had a true X dependable guy since, I mean, forever. And, I think it was important for them to kind of upgrade the receiving weapons for Mac Jones going into his second year of development. The offensive line is intact. It always is there. The running game's intact. It always is there. I think they really just needed a true number one receiver, and Parker has shown that when he can be healthy, that he is exactly a type of physical big body X receiver that they're getting. You know, another guy they tried to hit on, N'Keal Harry, didn't exactly work out as well, and he'll probably be moving locations soon too. So I think they finally got their ex guy that's proven reliable, just needs to stay healthy, and I think it's a good deal for Patriots and gives Mac Jones a true big guy, big target to throw to in the red zone. And yeah, I think it should work out. Mm-hmm.
For sure. Yeah, like I like that you brought up N'Keal Harry, because the next guy we're going to talk about, N'Keal Harry was picked over DK Metcalf, who apparently is available.
He's not available, but
he's
according
available.
To report, it's like the Russell Wilson type of available. We're not trading him, yeah. But you know, if you give us enough,
but you know,
we could talk. That's kind of the situation.
Like if you're the Packers, why would you not send one of them first?
But it's like
call him up right
but
now.
I think the situation here is like there's two things you have to understand in this situation. It's one, it's sending a good enough draft package that will get Seattle to start talking. And two, it's giving DK Metcalf a brand new contract that's probably around $25 to $28 million per year. So are you going to tell me right now that it's more worth doing that than having just paid Devontae Adams his 30?
For youth, I at least understand it. I mean, Devontae Adams is a better player. He's also, what, 28, 29? DK's a young bull still, and he's great, but he's not quite Devontae's level. But, I mean, they got nothing there. They got nothing there. I mean, if you're the Chiefs, call
them up. They got Amari Rodgers.
No, you didn't pay
time. They got Amari Rodgers, bro.
Amari Rodgers.
Alan Lazard,
that's all they need.
Hey, Randall Cobb still got some gas in the tank.
Does he really?
I mean, enough for what the Packers need, yeah.
So who are the main teams that should go after him? I mean, Packers and Chiefs got to be 1A and 1B on that list.
And the Patriots should still call.
Right the wrongs of their past.
The Jets,
because they specifically have, like, they have a lot of draft capital. I'm not saying they're going to give 4 or 10, but they have, like, 35 and 38, and they can give, like, another, like, a second, this, like, one of those picks, and then, like, a second Dude, next year.
Tyreek and Adams both went for late first-round picks. If someone's offering you a top 10 pick for DK Metcalf, you're taking that call.
Yeah, they wouldn't do that, but it's gonna be one of those top of the second picks plus something, maybe. I don't know. I mean, we've talked about it in the past. Like, I view receivers as extremely valuable, and I don't really understand why teams are just willing to just get rid of.
Realistically, I think Tyler Lockett is more likely to get traded than DK Metcalf, just based on age, just based on, you know, connection and stuff. I think DK should still see about the same kind of numbers with whoever's at quarterback. I think they want to funnel the offense more towards him. Lockett, a lot of it just felt like his connection with Russ was just way too good. So I think if anyone were to get traded between them two, it would be Lockett. But obviously, the price for Lockett's going to be less, and you won't get the same kind of player. But Lockett was always reliable for them.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm I keep mentioning the Chiefs, but give them a third, whatever. Give them something for a Tyler Lockett. Like, he can fill that role. I know they signed Scantling, and he's something. But, like, Tyler Lockett's a closer, like, you know, echelon-type player to Tyreek Hill than Valdes-Scantling is, other than just pure speed. But I don't know, man. NFL has been the craziest offseason I've ever been a part of, so it won't surprise me if DK gets traded tomorrow.
Yeah, that's facts. What about you, Kurt? What do you think? You brought up Buffalo as a potential option when we talked earlier about this.
Yeah, I think Buffalo would be a fantastic fit. I think it's a little unrealistic because they don't seem to be a team that likes to give up a ton of assets for offensive talent. They seem to like to scout their guys and get the guys in the right positions to make moves. We've seen that with Gabriel Davis with their, you know, obviously their investment on the running back position has not been too high. Cole Beasley, Emmanuel Sanders, now Jamison Crowder. They like to get those bargain bin, but still like efficient and like give you the production type of guys. But in a dream scenario, I think Buffalo would be the best fit. Gives them true like top big, you know, strong guy who can just go over the top and grab touchdowns left and right. Diggs is obviously an amazing route runner and would still command quite a bit of attention there, but I think giving Josh Allen a guy like DK would really kind of take the top off that defense.
They gotta go and pay Diggs now though. I mean, he's probably gonna be asking for a boatload
of
money.
Oh, yeah, he's going to get an extension.
Wouldn't you?
That's why it's an unrealistic fit, but I do like Buffalo. I think a more realistic fit, probably Philadelphia. They have the picks to send over and definitely have a hole at the X receiver as well. I think Tennessee
would be nice.
Tennessee, they are not shy about throwing assets at the receiver position. And I think, you know, they obviously have the connection, A.J. Brown with DK, and you're also hearing rumors about maybe A.J. Brown being traded too. So I think if they really want to retain.
Hey, can you.
Where'd you hear the A.J. Brown stuff?
It seems like he just dropped out. He'll be back. We'll ask him. I haven't heard
really?
That either.
I'm about to say, I really want to know.
But can you imagine being a defense and you got to go hit Derrick Henry, DK Metcalf, and AJ Brown in a game? You're gonna be sore by halftime.
They're taking that team to the gym. They need to get out the end of the squat rack. That's a lot of big boys. But speaking of young talent, we're gonna focus more on this episode on the draft and who we have moving forward into the next generation of the NFL. And the quarterbacks and running backs, like we said in the recording that we didn't post for the technical difficulties, the top-end quarterbacks just ain't there. They're just not there. Running backs, there seems like there's a good amount of talent like there was last year. Maybe not quite as much hype because the top guys don't go to Alabama and Clemson. But what are your thoughts on the quarterback and running back class?
Let's start with the quarterbacks. Kurt, when he comes back on, he is the biggest Malik Willis truther I know. And he's a Detroit Lions fan.
Yeah.
And he know he wants that at two. Because he knows if they don't get him at two, it's probably done. But I think it's an interesting class because I don't think there's one guy who kind of separates himself. But okay, Kurt's back now. We're gonna backstep for a quick second. Where'd you hear the AJ Brown rumors?
There's a bunch of Jets guys tweeting about it. I actually haven't seen it from a Titans beat reporter yet, but I know that the Jets are for sure looking
interesting. Man, the Jets are just down bad, bro. They'll do whatever.
They're the guy at the bar that's just—he's literally going from girl to girl, just asking. Like, you bout it. He ran through 20 girls already. All said no. They're trying to find any receiver, anybody to give Zach Wilson. But we just started talking about the quarterback class, and I hear that you are the Malik Willis stan. So what are your thoughts on him and the rest of the
class? When it comes to quarterbacks, I am key on traits. I think you coach a quarterback. I don't think they just come into your hands and, you know, they're going to be stud from day one. And
Unless you're Andrew Luck.
I mean, even still, you know, it wasn't as great as everyone expected it to be, and barring the whole retirement thing. I mean, you know.
Bro, who was his offensive line?
That's the point. It all comes into the situation and the coaching and what goes on around you. I don't think it's all on quarterback talent. I think it is so dependent on the other positions and coaching plays and everything. Mm-hmm. But regardless, I think Willis has those tools that you can build on. And we've seen quarterbacks in the past go into situations where they're able to build on these type of tools and really succeed. He has quite an arm. It's just not necessarily the highest refined IQ behind it. He makes some poor decisions here and there. But he is a really, really just hard, tough player. He's shown that he can take an ability, or he has the ability to take in coaching at a high level at the Senior Bowl, you know, in just 1 week. He clearly worked on a lot of the weaknesses with the Detroit Lions staff that they had down there. And, I mean, he did really well. A lot of the things that if you watch the Senior Bowl, you know, a lot of the weaknesses that Malik Willis has been said to have, he showed really great improvement on really, really quickly. And I don't know. I think if you get him into the right situation with a good coach who knows what he's doing, I think he can be one of those MVP-level type franchise quarterbacks just based on the tools that he has. But, of course, that takes a lot of factors into consideration. You need the coach, you need the offensive line, you need the receivers. At the top of the draft, you know, it's usually the teams who don't have those things in place picking, so it's a little hard to...
Exactly.
You know, exactly. Yeah, it gets a little hard to really forecast the situation.
You want him at two?
Yeah, I think Detroit, they do have those tools. I think they do have the coach.
They have a really good offensive line.
I think that's the most important thing, is they have protection for him, so he won't have to make decision super quickly. They have a starting quarterback in Jared Goff, so they don't need to throw Willis right under the bus from year one. They have some receivers getting in there finally, and it's looking like they'll definitely spend a high pick on one this year. So I think that they would be probably the most optimal fit, and it's not a biased thing, but yeah, I really just think that they would probably be the best fit. I don't really want him going to Carolina. I don't think that would work out too well. I don't really want him going to Seattle behind that offensive line.
Atlanta,
yeah, no. There's a couple situations, though, if he does slide past Detroit that I wouldn't see Malik doing too well in. And that does worry me a bit, but, you know, I trust the talent, I trust the prospect over it.
Do you remember, was Watson on that team at the Senior Bowl with Willis, or was he on the other team?
I think he was on the other team. I don't think I'm pretty sure we didn't coach Christian Watson. I remember the Lions had coached, so.
Okay. That would have been, because that would have been interesting seeing him throw to Watson.
He had a great report with Jalen Tolbert that whole week. That was definitely like his best guy, the South Africa.
And Tolbert's stock has grown a ton. I love
him. He's a true route runner. But anyway, yeah, I mean, him, Malik threw that ball well in the Senior Bowl. And I think with the right team, you know, he'll show improvement quite well.
I actually have a funny story about Malik. As you both know, when I used to work at Sleeps, I would work directly with athletes and stuff. His agent actually reached out to me because, I don't know if you know, Malik wears an arm sleeve every game. That arm sleeve was from the company I worked at, Sleeves. And they reached out to us before his senior season, or before this last season, about doing something with him. My boss said no, that was the end of the discussion, but I think it would have been really, because he still wore it in the game. They didn't pay him, he just wore it, which I thought was cool. But, cool. I mean, bag fumbled on our end. I pushed for it, but, you know, bag fumbled on that end. But to move on, I mean, you got other quarterbacks aside Willis that some view as a bit more pro-ready. Ole Miss quarterback Matt Corral, Pitt quarterback Kenny Pickett, the big-time winner of the group, Cincinnati quarterback Desmond Ridder, and then UNC Sam Howell, who at the beginning of this process was probably considered one of the top quarterbacks coming out, especially after a dynamic scene, freshman year 2 years ago. But now we kind of have this mad dash to kind of figure out who's the top guy. Willis obviously reminds me the most of like a Patrick Mahomes kind of player, where in the right situation, like a Detroit, where he can sit for a year, could actually get the most out of him. But taking Willis out of the equation, of the rest of the quarterbacks in this class, where do we see some of these top guys going, and why? Why should they go in these situations?
I mean, honestly, at least for me, I haven't really scouted these guys too much. I've seen them play, but I don't know. I just don't view them like even anywhere near like the traits as Kurt was saying with Willis. Like, if you look what the core quarterbacks have been successful the past however many years, like even like the, you know, your Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, Kyler Murray, Justin Herbert, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, like they have, like they make the wild plays, but they can just, they make things happen and have the, as well as have those traits to make those things happen. And maybe it's just the recency bias of those types of players working out, or maybe there's, you know, it's a little more something to that. I don't think I really see that with those other guys. You know, Matt Corral at Ole Miss, like he looked really good in some games, and then other bigger games he didn't look that great. And unfortunately, he got hurt in the bowl game, I believe, versus Baylor. That really sucks. Kenny Pickett with the fake slide, that was hilarious, awesome. I will say. I know they make a big deal out of like his hand size. I know there's something to that where like, oh, they have like a threshold type thing. It's like, oh, no NFL quarterback with like a smaller hand than, what was it, 9.5 or something. Whatever he has, it's lower than that threshold. So people are just like, oh, well, there it is. He's not going to be successful. I'm like, I mean, okay. But I don't know. I just don't really see. Desmond Ridder seems like a really good athlete. He might be like a Jalen Hurts type. I could see that. Runs a 4.4, has good rushing ability, can make some things happen in structure, but like you rely on him, it ain't gonna happen. But yeah, I'm with Kurt thinking that Willis is, if you're gonna bet on somebody, I can justify taking him up high, like in the top 10 of the draft. Of everyone else, unless we're talking about the 20s or trading up into the first round for pick 32 to get that fifth year option, after that's like second round, I'm not really going to bat for any of these
You're
guys.
You're telling me Kenny Pickett at 6 to the Panthers is a reach?
That would be hilarious. As a Giants fan, I would love for that to happen, because that means one of the premium position players are going to be available at 7.
I actually put down QBs and fits. I know you guys saw it. But I got Willis to the Lions. That makes sense, I think. And I think it's trending towards that. I think we're getting a lot of smoke and mirrors with these defensive players, too. And quarterbacks always find their way. As Macho Man Randy Savage would say, the cream always rises to the top. You got I got Matt Corral to the Seattle. I think he's a fit there for what they want to do. Pass happy offense. He did it at Ole Miss. Kenny Pickett to Pittsburgh. So he stays in town. He played at that field already. He knows the elements there. I think he would be a good plug and play. They got to focus on that offensive line still. I think they did improve bringing in James Daniel. And it would be good competition alongside Mitch Trubisky. See who can take that job. Desmond Ridder, I'd have probably falling into the second round, but I think he fits in Atlanta, especially for what you said, Steven, about him being that kind of athlete. I think him sitting behind Mariota a few games, kind of getting used to the NFL, learning, seeing that kind of style of play, I think it would benefit him, but in the second round, because Atlanta has way too many holes also. Sam Howell, I have going to Tampa Bay. I think that's a good fit for him. I had that mocked to him first round a couple months ago, actually, just because I thought, you know, you got to think of the future beyond Brady, and Kyle Trask is not the future. I think Hal could also benefit sitting, taking some time. And then I also did Western Kentucky's Bailey Zappe. He had a great year, 61 touchdowns, I think. I think he broke Burrow's record.
61 touchdowns.
Yeah, he broke Burrow's record. I am going to the Colts. I think sitting behind Matt Ryan, it's kind of a similar play style. And, you know, maybe a third-round guy, but could be an option to watch him develop behind Ryan for those 2 years and then see what happens. Kurt, what are you thinking on these quarterbacks?
I think it all comes down again to what I said for the whole Willis thing, is that quarterbacks are built on traits. And, you know, I think it's dependent on a coach to get the most out of those traits. And I think because of that, there is a trait with each of these consensus top six guys that I could see any of them going in the first round to a team that falls in love with them. Carson Strong has the second strongest arm, no pun intended, behind Malik Willis in this draft. A lot of people peg him lower because he is probably the most unrefined of all the quarterbacks in this draft. But when it comes back to the traits, I think there's a very good chance you could see him in the back end of the first round. I think Desmond Ridder, he's a guy who I think he could both come in, contribute a little bit in year one, and kind of be a guy for a team that already has an offensive line of receivers in place to kind of win them some more games, and someone they might have already, I think, of. Pittsburgh comes fresh to mind. You know, I think he would definitely win more games than Mitch Trubisky or Mason Rudolph would as the starter there. But I also then also necessarily wouldn't want Desmond Ridder going to Seattle at 9, where he wouldn't necessarily get the best offensive line protection, and I don't think that would work out. So I think it, again, comes down to destination a lot. Corral is a guy I see going early in the draft just because there's going to be a team who really loved his film from the season. It was good. I'm not the most sold on the entire package of Corral, but I could totally see a team like Atlanta taking him at 8 or Carolina at 6 if they really, really fall in love with him and convince themselves on him as a prospect. You mentioned Zapp. There's a team who's going to take Zapp, I think, in the second or third round for sure and try to develop him. He has a pretty strong arm. He played in quite the highlight reel offense, and that sometimes translates well to the NFL when you can throw those deep passes and all that. It's not necessarily a pro offense where you're going to instantly know what you're doing in the NFL, but if the right coaching, you sit him for a year and everything, just give him some concepts, he'll get there. Forgetting someone, Sam Howell. He had a very shaky season. I did like him preseason, but wow. It was very up and down. He's another guy who, again, has traits, though, that you can work with and you can build on. And I could see a team like Washington taking him at 11, especially with Dyami Brown over there already. You know, they'd already have that connection. Still this recent quarterback and wide receiver college reunions in the NFL, you know, and could see Sam Howell and Dammy Brown doing something with that. And I don't think all five of them go in the first round, but I think there is totally a world, call me crazy, where a bunch of them do go in the first round. Based simply off teams just loving them and selling themselves on these guys. I don't think it will happen. I think you maybe see two or three get taken in the first round. But, I mean, you know, you got these guys. They all have something to bring to the table. Oh, and I completely skipped over Kenny Pickett. I'm not a Kenny Pickett fan. I think the ceiling is pretty much there already. I don't think he improves much. And I don't think he's that great as it is. But there's going to be a team also who I think could convince themselves that they can take him in the first round, do really well with him. And, I mean, I think we say this every year, you know, quarterback and the draft as a whole is a crapshoot. But I think much more so this year with those quarterbacks, it's a complete crapshoot because they all have traits that can make them really good. But they all have weaknesses that probably won't make them a day one starter. And you'll be lucky to have them starting anytime soon if they don't really develop instantly and well.
I get the feeling that this year it's going to be a lot more like a domino effect with these quarterbacks. Like once one or two start going, then it's just going to be like start picking it up. And then I think the same goes with the wide receivers this year too. Like people are already expecting at least five first round guys. I think that could easily go up to seven or eight.
Six, yeah. Now I think wherever because people are like, especially someone like Garrett Wilson, they're like, oh well, he could go off the board at 10, or Drake London, they can go off the board at 10.
Hey, some people have them as high as 8 to the Falcons.
I mean, I've seen Garrett Wilson or London at 4, like to the Jets. People are like, fuck it. But I mean, I'm not saying that I would do that, but like kind of like with offensive tackles, it was one draft, I believe it was 2012, the year the Cam Newton draft, where like it was like just trash cans like Jake Locker and Christian Ponder. Like they were getting picked at just hilarious spots. I think Jake Locker was 8, Christian Ponder was 12, and we're just like, what are we doing here? Like, just what are we doing here? Like, I feel like that would be kind of like this year, except there's no Cam.
Put some respect on Christian Ponder's name, bro. His wife stayed on NFL fields longer than he has. Come on.
I think that that Christian Ponder and Locker class is similar to this in the sense that there is such like a domino effect of, that quarterback got taken. And I actually think I could be wrong. I don't think Cam Newton was that class. I think it was the year before, and I think Blake Bortles was the first quarterback in that class. But anyway, all three of them, Blake Bortles, Locker, and Christian Ponder, you know, I think they were overpicked, and I think that would be very similar to this season where you have a bunch of guys who are getting overpicked. But I also could see some of them working out. That's why it's like such a weird like draft, and that's why I hope I'm not a team who has to take a quarterback in this class, even though my team does probably. But
all right. Yeah. Wait, I got you guys. I just searched it up. The year was 2011. It was the Cam Newton draft. Cam Newton went first overall.
Okay. Yeah. I think I remember because there was like that Sports Illustrated cover where it was like three or four of the quarterbacks. Like who's I don't know what the cover was. I just remember that. And like it was hilarious. Hold up.
Let me get you real quick. Cam Newton was first.
Okay.
Quarterback wise.
Yeah.
This draft class was so stacked though. It's Cam, then Vaughn, then Marcel Darius, AJ Green, Patrick Peterson, Julio Alden Smith, Jake Locker at 8 to the Tennessee Titans, Tyron Smith at 9, Blaine Gabbert at 10 to the Jaguars.
I picked him up with Bortles.
Blaine, all aboard the Blaine train.
JJ Watt at 11, Christian Ponder at 12, and then the next quarterback was Andy Dalton, but that was second round 35. It was Dalton then Kaepernick the very next pick. So, yeah, there's some good misses in that draft.
That's hilarious. It's always funny going back to those drafts and being like, oh, all-pro, five-year all-pro player, trash quarterback, then another all-pro player.
Dude, this was literally a class. You could have thrown a dart at any skill position player at the top, and you would have gotten a highly successful guy. But these guys went Locker, Gabbert, Ponder.
Yep. 2014 was like that, too, if I remember correctly. Like, all in, like, a little span, like, Aaron Donald, Zach Martin, Odell, Beckham Jr. Like, it was just a bunch of just goons. And, you picked But yeah, that's the thing is the quarterback, you know, they have the most value. Huh?
Eric Ebron, I mean
you're the Lions fan, so I'm sure that hurts.
Hey, it was good with Andrew Luck.
That year I think was also got some touchdowns.
Had a good year.
Johnny Manziel quarterback.
Yeah, 2014. Yeah, I think you're right. Nah, that's hilarious, man. 2014, that's why picking a quarterback is so is such a risk. Like, you either keep your job for 5 years as an executive, or you get fired in two if you pick the wrong guy. And I don't know, man. It's going to be interesting. I'm glad. I mean, my team, the Giants, I mean, we need a quarterback, but, like, there isn't one that – they really think, like, if there was a guy, like, they would probably trade 5 and 7.
Is Struder, Bryce Young were in this class.
Well, there were,
like, oh, yeah, no, absolutely. And I would be screaming from every goddamn rooftop I can find. That would be the move. But, I mean, some people think, like, my one boy who's a Vikings fan, he's like, I love Malik Willis. The Giants would be stupid not to pick him. I'm like, I mean, I don't know, man. We need a lot of other things too.
I think Philly's in the best position here because they got a good roster. They got those three first round picks, and there's reports that they don't want to stay in those spots. They want to trade into next year's draft. They want more picks for next year to possibly move up in case they don't believe in Hurts. So we'll see. I mean, I don't think teams are being shy about how much of a weaker class this is at the top. And then next year you got Young and Stroud. We could potentially be talking about Rattler back at the top. We could be talking about Tyler Van Dyke. I mean, there's going to be options next year. The return of Ugalele.
No. I remember when people went in, like, because he was like one of the number one.
Well, him and Rattler.
Him and Rattler, and he just...
It was the Heisman favorite.
Yeah, he just ain't turned out. Like, I remember last year, like, people thought Rattler, I mean, me included, I'm like, well, there's another Oklahoma quarterback that can create out of structure and has some of those traits, but he just is a bonehead.
He's apparently his teammates didn't like him either, so...
Yeah, I mean, jobs are kept and lost based off of drafting quarterbacks, and, I mean... Running backs is a different story. I mean, if you're Dave Gettleman, you should get fired for picking a running back high.
Hey.
But other GMs are sensible and wait till later on in the draft. So who are some of the teams that are better fit to take some of our top
guys? Lucky for you, Steven, this year the Giants will not have an opportunity to take a guy at 5 or 7 at running back because there's no guy that should be taken that high. Are there first-round running backs this year? I think you could see one or two. They'll probably fall into the second round. Well, we always go back into the myth of the first round running back.
I mean, Rashad Penny just got an extension.
It's a tough one, but
yeah,
he did
5.7 million.
I have him in our I have him in our league. I'm very happy about that.
Yeah,
I didn't even see that.
Yeah, I think Carroll said that he's going to get like first dibs at the running back spot next year. I'm like, hell yeah. That's the thing. You draft those running backs high when you have other needs. It's like it's just kind of like why. So it's like we have to be positions, spots on teams that like already have other
things. T. Higgins instead of
and they're young at those positions.
They could have had Jonathan Taylor.
Don't get me started on that.
They could have had Jonathan Taylor. Kurt, would you consider that Rashad Penny extension a second contract, or would you consider it the fifth year option that they didn't originally pick up?
The option like $11 million, but
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
But as I was saying, there's two guys in this draft class that I think are neck and neck for that top running back spot. It's Breece Hall, Iowa State's Breece Hall, who essentially paced the country in rushing touchdowns per game. And then my personal favorite, probably my favorite player in this entire draft, Michigan State running back Kenneth Walker, who carried the Spartans back into football prominence. And they have a good team next year, but Kenneth Walker was that guy last year. And I want your take on this, Kurt, but he's essentially Javonte Williams 2.0.
You're on Kenneth Walker, so I'll cut you some slack. But, yeah, no, I like Walker. I think he can be a workhorse. I just don't think he's going to be one of those, like, elite workhorses. He doesn't have the speed to rip off a 95-yarder, you know, like a Derrick Henry or a LeSean McCoy used to, you know. But at the same time, I mean, he's very refined. He has a technique. He is a great runner. He reminds me a lot of, like, a Nick Chubb with more receiving upside, in a sense. A little faster, too. I like Kenneth Walker. I think his best spot would probably be Chargers in the second round. I think they kind of need a, you know, backup for Eckler, and Eckler is still that elite guy, but I don't think they can really afford to pay him past the Herbert rookie contract window, which is up in a year or two. So,
but they extended Eckler already.
Yeah, and
he's on a pretty
probably minimally guaranteed.
He's on like a 4-year deal
to save cap whenever that Herbert extension occurs, and that's when you need to start paying more premium positions. So I don't know. I think I could see them doing it. But yeah, I do like Walker a lot, but Breece Hall is number one for me.
I think I have Breece Hall going to Buffalo. I think that's an ideal fit for both parties. Buffalo needs to work on that run game. I think the Zach Moss experiment is, if not over, very close to being over. And Singletary showed his worth, but I don't know if I trust him being an every down
back.
I think Breece Hall gives you that. Singletary. What happened? Yeah. Yeah, so I think Hall takes that offense to the next level, realistically. Especially with the pieces they've added, O.J. Howard, Jamison Crowder, like you said. They revamped their O-line, bringing in Roger Saffold. I have Kenneth Walker to Atlanta. I think they're in dire need of running back help, and he fits that.
Mike Davis. What do you mean? They got the GOAT, Cordarrelle Patterson.
You mean Mike Davis?
Mike Davis.
I made this before I knew Penny resigned, so I had Spiller going to Seattle. Awesome. I'd have to reevaluate that. Yeah. Texas
A&M. I mean, they still might. Seattle's an awful organization, so right. They can do anything.
Oh, they could. Hopefully.
That's another thing. I would love to sometime go on a rant about how awful of an organization Seattle is and how Pete Carroll is a trash-ass coach who got carried by Russell Wilson.
What about that defense? Russell Wilson got carried by that defense.
Well, yeah, they built a great team for a little bit, and they had a scheme that worked. And then once that was over with,
they had two insane draft classes.
Like it was Russ like carrying everybody. Relevant, you know, they wanted to run the ball.
They never were able to repeat that magic. They did. Magic.
They really did.
It's funny because I mean, they just traded their franchise quarterback and greatest of all time, Seahawk, for number 9. And yes, there's more first rounds attached to it. But apparently, they wanted so badly to get back in this first round this year because they like some guy. And it's just so funny because they, you know, they trade their franchise quarterback again for really? Number 9 and other picks, but you know, the number 10 was traded to the Jets for Jamal Adams 2 years ago, along with other first round picks. So their roster building in Seattle just isn't very trustworthy.
Jamal Adams. They traded a 1, another 1, and a 2. For the privilege of paying Jamal Adams like $20 million.
The privilege of Blitz Boy.
I just don't for good old Blitz Boy. I don't understand that. Like it's just I don't know, man. I just don't get it. And then you trade the face of the franchise
for the funniest
basically the same compensation, if I'm not mistaken.
Hey, you got Drew Locke and Noah Fant too though.
Kyle Hamilton somehow falls on 9.
That connection will never die.
But based off just positional value, there's a chance he does. If they were to pick him at 9 while paying Quandre Diggs $12 million per year, Jamal Adams $20 million per year,
I would love
the best three safety defense in the league.
They would not take him.
Oh, for sure.
They would not take him. But to continue, I got Georgia running back James Cook going to Arizona, kind of filling in that hole left by Chase Edmonds. Alabama running back Brian Robinson Jr., who had a very good college football playoffs, going to the New York Jets to kind of be that number two to Michael Carter, who I love. And
my
father. I think we might be the same age though, so.
Yeah, I mean, some wild is going on there.
And then Georgia, the other Georgia running back, Zamir White to the Dolphins, give them that little power back. But yeah, what do you guys think on some of these running backs? And realistically, I think James Cook could jump a lot higher than what was originally expected.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some mocks, like, because I read a lot of mocks and I pay attention to what people put for the Giants. And because we have 2 third-round picks, and I know Saquon, he's not getting another contract. If they were smart, they would trade him for a bag of peanuts, but they won't. So, I mean, I would like someone. James Cook impressed me, I believe. His receiving ability, he's got the Jets, like his brother, but he would be a good fit. Third, I'm anti running back making any sort of money for my team or being picked in the first round. But like third, fourth, I feel like that's a great little spot for a running back, because you got to take premium players higher than that. But they can make a difference on the field. Just don't allocate a lot of the salary cap to them. So this is the group of running backs that I'll be paying attention to if I was building a team.
I'm anti running back, pro fullback. Let's just get one fullback in the backfield and that's it.
And that's it.
Hey, Alec Ingold was the Dolphins' best offseason signing. And I texted Kurt right when the Dolphins signed Ingold, and I was like, Kurt, you won't believe who the Dolphins just signed. I'm so happy.
I like him, too. I love Ingold. I think he's the best. When we're talking fullbacks, like, yeah, he's a good fullback. But, yeah, he's a fullback. You know?
Hey, no fullback slander. Okay. Not on this podcast. We're redefining this podcast to a Dolphins and fullback podcast.
True money move. True money move for that.
We'll get like one viewer each time.
Bleacher Report and ESPN. It'll just be one handing out offers. It'll just left be one and of right us rewatching to buy the rights to the show. I'm a big James Cook guy. There was a point where I actually had him RB1. Then the combine came and Kenneth Walker and Breece Hall performed a lot better than I thought, and their speed was quite off the charts, and I'm a cutie for speed. You give me some speed and I love you instantly. But yeah, I really like James Cook. I think it's so funny you mentioned Arizona. That's my perfect fit for him too. I think he would do really well there. He's that home run hitter, plays pretty much like Dalvin. I mean, they're very comparable. They're brothers, but they're very comparable prospects. They have very similar game style. They're both great receivers. I love James Cook as a receiver. I think he can be great pretty much anywhere he goes. I think Arizona would be a really good option. Him and James Conner together, you get the Bruiser and the Lightning, you know, true Thunder and Lightning combo there. It'd be really, really solid. My guy this year, though, is Ty Chandler at UNC. He's not flashy, but he's going to be one of those guys who, you know, will be relevant for the next 8-10 years or however long he can last, barring injury. He doesn't have speed that jumps off right at you, but it's there. He doesn't have strength that jumps right at you, but it's there. He's a great runner, and I think his best traits are actually his receiving and his pass protection. Pass protection keeps you around in this league, even if you're not the best, you know, yardage producer and everything. But he's amazing at pass protection, really holds his own. As a receiver, he is a mismatch. He's just really good at, like, route running and cutting. He's always beating linebackers and safeties, matching up against him. And I really like him, in, you know, as a fourth or fifth round guy, because that's where a lot of people have him going. I would pick him in second round over a bunch of these other running backs. He's my RB5. But I really like Ty Chandler out of UNC. He's my little stud this year, who I think is going to be pretty, pretty solid in the league. Yep.
Another UNC running back.
He's kind of a blend of Javonte and Michael, but like not as strong in the areas that both of them are great at. He's kind of that all-around runner guy, but not necessarily elite in any way. But yeah, kind of like a blend between Carter and Javonte. Yeah.
That's pretty solid, though. But, Kurt, I want to ask you this because you probably looked at it a bit more than I have. We'll just take a couple minutes on this before we move on to wrapping up with offensive tackles or offensive linemen. Since we already did wide receivers before, and it's a deep class, I mean, there's going to be hits, a lot of hits this year at receiver.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on the tight end class? There's not a guy that really stands out head and shoulders elite like we've seen the past couple of years, so it's not getting that much attention. But
I think
what are your
all
thoughts
the tight ends
class?
In this class are watch? Gadget guys. Trey McBride has the best chance of being that every down starting tight end. He's the most well-rounded in terms of blocking and receiving, but he's still just kind of like subpar still in all those areas. He's just not great. I don't see him being more than maybe an 800-yard receiver as a tight end, if that. And he'll give up a sack here and there. So, you know, he's just not the best on both ends, but he's pretty well-rounded both ends and won't necessarily lose you games from blocking or lose you games from dropping a ball. He's not an Eric Ebron or something like that. Had to throw that shot. But they are all kind of gadget guys. Isaiah Likely, I think, would be the most likely to really profit off as a receiver, but he's really, really bad at blocking. I don't think you expect to use him in that line. I actually had him going to Jacksonville, but then they paid Evan Engram to do basically the same thing that he's good at. So, you know, I was kind of right. They basically still got an Isaiah Likely over there. But he's fast, you know.
Wait, that hold on. Evan Engram is good at something?
He's just a fast receiver, a fast receiving tight end.
It caught me a little off guard. I'm sorry.
I think Likely doesn't
he's
have
good
the
at getting paid to drop
but,
balls.
You know, just the same like route tree of a tight end. Where,
yeah, he is.
They can go over the top and beat a linebacker easily and cleanly. Yeah, he's that type of guy. But doesn't have the dropping and fumble issues that come with Evan Engram. So I like him as a decently productive receiver. Jeremy Ruckert at a tight end could be like a nice backup tight end, but I don't know. It's a pretty weak tight end class. I'm not a fan. I wouldn't be trying to fill any starting tight end positions with this class. It's great for the late end guys. You could get a nice backup, but yeah, not too sure.
Well, yeah, that's what I figured with the tight end class. I haven't taken a close enough look yet, but now we can move on to what can be considered the most important part, the most fundamental building block of a football team, the fullback. No, all right, but the offensive linemen, and we know we have a couple good ones this year. There's a good handful of them. First off, let's start with the real question. Who's the best offensive lineman in this class?
Are we talking just
we're talking general.
Or...
if you want to go tackle, guard, center, tackle, interior, but just overall, who should be the first offensive lineman off the board this year?
The Georgia guard.
Who?
No, but he is one of my favorites.
You think he should be the first guy off the board?
I think overall it's probably Kenyon Green for me.
I like him a lot, too.
I like Tyler Linderbaum. He's solid.
I love
but I don't think it's
I like Lindstrom this year, too.
Ekwonu, as most people think. I just think that the guard position and center positions are a little safer. I think Kenyon Green is almost a certified Pro Bowler. So is Linderbaum. I like Zion Johnson on the interior as well. Yeah, Salyer's my guy. I think he should be in that first-round conversation. He's probably the best run blocker I've seen since Quentin Nelson at the interior. So I'm a huge, huge Salyer fan. But, no. And he's versatile.
He had to play tackles for
very,
Georgia
very
at the
big
end of
guy.
The year.
So, you know, he's not the fastest, so you probably don't want him going against a Brian Burns or a, you know, one. Yeah, yeah.
Hey, he held his own against Hutchinson.
Yeah.
Isn't the fastest, but he did hold his own.
Yeah.
And people were clowning Hutchinson after that game. Though,
is that you do have those more polished and, like, wow offensive tackles than the first couple guys, you know, with Cross and Neal and Ekwonu. But I think there's so much depth in this class. I think there's a lot of guys who you can take in third and fourth round and hope to build up. Maybe not to be a franchise tackle, but to someone who could hold their own and keep your quarterback off the ground. You got Daniel Falele, Minnesota, Petit Frere from Ohio State. I really like Rashid Walker out of Penn State. I think could be a starting left or right tackle. He's pretty Bernard solid. I think he would take a little more development than some of those other guys that I named.
But I think if it's between him and Falele, they're about the same in my eyes.
I just don't see how anybody... I think Falele is just
a lot bigger and a lot harder to move.
Besides pure speed, you get these, like, 4-4 edges with Trayvon Walker coming in this class. That's a little weird. But other than that, I mean, I don't think that any speed or size beats 6'10", 400 pounds Daniel Falele. Like, it's just ridiculous. And I don't understand why some people have him in the third round. He wasn't the most refined, but you can easily build something with that. And he's going to be in it. But, yeah.
Yeah, in the right system.
So, Kurt, as a Giants fan, hopefully who am I hoping? Which one of the tackles am I hoping that we pick?
It's just very deep. But I do like
that. You don't like any of the dudes?
I don't think you have to take them at 5 or 7 to get your blind side protected. Yeah, I know.
Have you watched any?
And they probably will. I think if Evan Neal somehow fell to 5, that'd be the best. He's my favorite tackle. But I just think he's not too far off of some of the other guys that you can get in that second or third round. My money though would probably be on Ekwonu. He's just the most athletic of the guys, and
icky.
I see you guys drafting athleticism based prospects from here on out with your new regime, and
yeah, that's what from what I've seen and articles where they dove into what Shane and Bean have gone after in the past was they've got guys with those traits that you could coach up, which kind of makes me scared that they're gonna get Trayvon Walker at their second pick
if he falls.
Ikey Ekwonu, I hope that man goes number 2 or 3. That would be absolutely fantastic for me. But Ekwonu, he's that road grading, he's a beast in the run game. But I don't really give a fuck about that. I need you to be able to stop an edge rusher, please. Okay. And that's Charles Cross had 800 passing snaps last year, and it looks like he's the most, I guess, refined. Mike Leach's system is, more niche than others. But still, that's a lot of reps and a lot of SEC edge rushers and a lot of talent that he went up after. But I've followed Evan Neal since he was was a 5-star recruit coming into Alabama. He's played guard, right tackle, and left tackle, so he already has he already has that experience, and he's just 6'7", 340 pounds, and he does not look it. My goodness. That when I saw that those pictures of him, wow, he is incredible.
But it's the same as Kenyon Green, like Kurt was saying. Green's played every spot on the A&M offensive line when he was there. And I think that you're seeing a lot more versatility from these offensive linemen these past few years. I think there's more of a importance in knowing how to play, hand in the dirt, hand up, inside, outside. But for me, I really like Tyler Linderbaum. But my issue with going after Linderbaum this year is that it's a pretty good center class. And I think if you're going to use first-round capital on Linderbaum in a pretty top-heavy draft class at other positions, I kind of would prefer going Lindstrom, the Boston College center. in the third round. No. And I think Lindstrom's this year's Creed Humphrey.
Very few times we'll send. I have that much faith in that man. But I do really? Like Lindstrom. I think he can definitely become a starting center in the league. I think the best strategy for the Giants would probably be trading 7 or 5 down to like 20 and getting like Trevor Penning. His RAS was ridiculous. I think you know, the whole relative athletic score that Math Bomb does on Twitter. I could be wrong. I haven't looked at it in a bit, but I'm pretty sure Colton Miller was the only offensive tackle who's ever had a higher RAS than Trevor Penning. And Colton Miller was also a freak athlete. Yeah, and Trevor Penning has, like, really solid tape. He's been a good NFL player. The athlete matching the tape, which isn't something you get in an offensive line too often. He just has that horrible clip that everyone loves to gloss over, which is where he, at the Senior Bowl, threw his back into his quarterback legs. It's a bad look. Rusher into he wasn't the very quarterback. Heavily penalized throughout his college career, but, I mean, he could really be that blind side or right side protector that, like, just doesn't give up a sack for his like entire career, like Joe Thomas or something, I think, if he develops correctly. So I like him a lot, and you don't have to pay number 5 or number 7 to get him.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm gonna watch 10 games of film on a offensive lineman type guy. So that's a lot of investment, and I just. Hey, we need y'all, man. We need y'all. And it just seems like I feel like most people are very heavily influenced by who gets mocked where in a lot of the, you know, the Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, Daniel Jeremiah, PFF, where are they all put like out their mock drafts? And we're just like, oh, well, you know, these guys are going around here. So if they fall, oh, it's great value. It's just like, I mean, who knows, man? It's the NFL draft. Obviously, there's tiers of players, but, like, who's to say that, you know, Charles Cross is not going to be better than Evan Neal or Ekwonu, or that Trevor Penning isn't going to end up being the OT1? We always look back on these drafts and see, oh, wow, this player was drafted
or way higher,
way lower, yet they just became a beast.
No disrespect to Kurt. But you're saying that you could have taken Rashawn Slater at 11 over Penisul at, what was it, 3, 4, and gotten at 7, and gotten similar outcome. So, I mean, sometimes it's just the guys who aren't touted as the elite guys that just come out of nowhere and are day one right there in the trenches. No, I'm saying that, you know, sometimes it's not the guys.
They could have picked that either.
Sometimes it's not the guy.
In an ideal world, of course.
That you think it is.
But at the end of the day, after week 4, Rashawn Slater's PFF grade was 78.8. Penei Sewell's was 91.2. Just saying. But you could have probably had decent production out of Slater at number 11 compared to Sewell at number 7. Slater's great, and I think it's very similar to last year's class. And the class before that, which had Wirfs and Wills and all those guys, where it's just so deep in offensive tackle that I don't think you have to take that guy at number 3 if you're the Texans, or at number 4 if you're the Giants. So, I mean, at number 5. I like the offensive line class overall in this group. I think any of them can be all pros at the top, and I also think a lot of pro bowlers in the second and third rounds. So it's a tricky one for asset management, but
I'm a Dolphins fan. I can't even worry about day one and most of day two, but or even day 3 for that fact. I should not be caring much about this draft this year, but fellas, it's getting to be that time. Any closing thoughts, statements, questions, anything you want to put out there before we sign off?
Not really, man. It's like, to recap everything, you know, quarterbacks, running backs, it's running backs similar to last year. Quarterbacks, there's probably one guy where I can actually see becoming a star, and the rest of them are just straight mid, honestly. And I don't, and like I do think Kurt brought a great point with pretty much all players in the draft, but quarterbacks especially, the ecosystem that they are drafted into and the coaching matters so much. And I don't trust a lot of the teams that need quarterbacks, they need quarterbacks for a reason. You look at the Falcons, the Seahawks, like they're just like the Panthers. They're not great spots. Like they're, you know, GM and coach aren't always in alignment, or their coaching staff really isn't effective at coaching players up or providing a good system to better fit those quarterbacks. And like Kurt said, there are worlds in which all these guys can succeed, but I don't know. It ain't looking good for most of them, because they're going to go to those, you know, there's a reason successful organizations are successful and the others are not. I'm sure Kurt can attest to that as a Lions fan. And the last 10 years as a Giants fan have been very similar. So we don't have the luxury of having being a fan of a better
fan. We're all just in poverty.
It's funny because as a Dolphins fan, y'all have never really won anything, yet you're in the best spot of all three of us.
Hey, right now. If it all ends up on the same day, watching on the couch for the Super Bowl. And that's what matters at the end of the day. We're crowning off-season champions like it means something. You'll get to walk home with a trophy after.
I agree with Kurt's thoughts. Everything Steven just said. I think this year, you know, you are going to definitely have that top five surprise just because everybody's so unsure on consensus top however many prospects, you know. And I definitely think there will be. You know, you got Clelin Ferrell going number four in a relatively normal draft class. So who's to say what's going to happen this year?
I love it. That was
dude,
one of the
I
best.
Was at the movies. I was
I
at the movies
that.
Watching
I remember
Avengers.
Because I texted him, like, you need to get it.
I want to say Endgame.
I'm like,
this man,
watch Avengers
it's during the draft. This man texts me, and this man texts me. He's like, "Bro, Colin Farrell just went at four," and then a string of texts after, just questioning all the logic to it. And
Mike
then they
Mayock.
Went what? They went Alex Leatherwood the next year.
And it was so predictable.
Yeah, Alex.
Hire these NFL Network idiots.
He gotta go. He gotta go.
But yeah.
Yeah, I'm hoping for a Trayvon Walker and a Malik Willis in the top four.
Trayvon Walker's there. I think he's there at this point.
I hope so. Because that means Kayvon
Thibodeau.
I'm forgetting that name. There is seven.
In Houston, the Jack guy, who's old Christian, the whole big thing with the Watson thing. I'm telling you, this man's going to insert his influence. They're going to take some like Christian school guy, some Notre Dame dude at number three or something. Well, I guess Kyle, but it's someone else. Some more unpredictable.
Kyle Hamilton. But
yeah, should be.
Sounds good to me. Sounds good to me.
So I'm going to double down here on the fullback position. I'm going back to it, man. I love fullbacks. I think especially for a team like the Dolphins who lacked an efficient run game last year, the fullback is one of the best ways to improve a run game essentially instantly. It's another blocker. It opens lanes. It clears the way. When you have a guy like Ingold, who's also a pass catcher out of the backfield, can pass block. You saw what McDaniels did with Juszczyk in San Fran, put him back there by himself as a blocker going out of the backfield. I think if you have a guy that's that dynamic, that big, that you can rely on to not just block for you but make plays too, it's extremely important, and it helps your running backs, it helps a young quarterback. And like I said, the game's modernizing, the game's getting faster, but the teams that use fullback successfully still go pretty far. But besides that, I think it was nice having y'all boys on. Steven, once again, Kurt, always good talking to you. And next week, it'll be just me and Kurt. Steven will be out of town. We'll be back on our draft talks. And, yeah, thanks for tuning in. You can catch us wherever you listen to podcasts. And
drink more water.
That's pretty much it, right, fellas?
Right. Yeah, I would go and preach. Drink more water. Appreciate y'all for joining us. 3, 2, 1, 2.